Welcome to another edition of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey, and next up is the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Jarmo Kekäläinen. He is certainly a man of principle. We're going to talk about how he became the first and why is he still the only European-born GM. A pretty reserved Finn, how he and the fiery John Tortorella get on so well. But one thing that he'll never do when dealing with his head coach. We've got that and plenty more that we talk about in this conversation with Jarmo Kekäläinen. Being down here for the general manager's meetings, we always get to do a couple podcasts with you all. Is this a chance for you to sort of see your fellow GMs in a different light? It's a more relaxed atmosphere. You know, you're talking about issues that are sort of common to you all.
Yeah. It's a great time of the year. After the trade deadline, you get to wind down a little bit and get the warm weather here, too. That doesn't hurt. I could get used to it easily, but it's a great time with the colleagues. You get to sit down with for a few dinners, some laughs, and then we get down to the business in the meetings and try to talk about some improvements we could make, and it's a lot of fun.
So for you, though, coming down here is a chance to get some tennis in?
Yeah, that too. A lot of guys play golf. I'd rather play tennis, and there's a great facility here for that, too.
I did hear that you and George McPhee have an annual game here.
Yeah, we've had that, and George is a good player. Now he's moved on to the president's role, so he doesn't get to take part in the meetings anymore. But I've heard that there's a challenge now that he's got a new hip. Kelly McCrimmon was telling me that George is going to challenge me now with his new hip, and I said, bring it on.
So now you're taking on younger guys, players?
Yeah. I got a surprise text from Marty Havlat, a player that I was involved drafting when I was with Ottawa Senators in the late 90s, and that was a great surprise. He's supposedly very good, so I'll get a lot of exercise this afternoon, that's for sure.
What kind of a player are you? Serving volley?
No, I'm more of a try to avoid the unforced errors type of player, but I've actually battled tendonitis for a while here, so I haven't been able to play that much, but I've played pickleball instead quite a bit because that's easier on my arm. But yeah, Julien Brisebois, he's going to join us too today at 3 o'clock, so he's a good tennis player as well.
Who's your favorite player? Are you a Federer guy or an Nadal guy? Do you like to watch the big players?
I'm definitely a Federer guy. He is awesome, and the way he's been able to endure and stay on top is just amazing, and he's such a classy athlete as well. So yeah, he's my favorite for sure.
You've seen him play live? You see him play?
Yeah. I went to the tournament in Cincinnati, and it was a lucky break there. We got to see Federer and Djokovic in the final, so that was a lot of fun. And I went to first time to the U.S. Open last fall as well with my wife, who's also a passionate tennis player. So yeah, we had a lot of fun there.
You guys play doubles together, you and your wife?
No. not yet anyways.
That
could cause some problems.
Whether you played with her or against her?
I play against her. We hit balls sometimes, just singles, and get some practice, and no mixed doubles yet.
So good exercise. Do you ever get on the ice much anymore?
I used to play a lot in these staff skates that we have every game day, but then Jody Shelley fell on my ankle, and I had a high ankle sprain, and I was out for 2 months, and after that, I haven't played quite as much.
A little bit like your team. What is the deal with all these injuries? I know people don't like to talk about injuries, but you've had a crazy run. I mean, how do you handle that?
Well, the best you can, I guess. You know, I try not to worry about things that are out of my control. And there's been some freak accidents and stuff that, you always try to look at the injuries. Is there a reason behind them? Or are we doing something right? Are we doing something wrong? Why are these happening? But we've had broken bones. We've had a couple of high ankle sprains with a broken bone in there with Seth Jones and Oliver Bjorkstrand, and nothing you can do about those. Couple of broken ribs and just bad luck this year. And I'm a believer that at the end it always evens out. So we've had some good years that with not so many injuries. This year is a bad one, and so hopefully next year will be a healthy one again.
So you've been in the GM's chair in Columbus more than 600 games, which is longer than either of your predecessors, right? Doug McLean or Scott Housen. Does it feel like do you feel like you've been there a long time?
Yeah, I don't keep count of that really, but But yeah, it's been a great experience for me so far. It seems like it just gets better and better, and as you gain experience as well and learn on the job. Been very fortunate to work with the people that we have both in the organization around me and above me, with the ownership that we have and Mike Priest overseeing everything as the president there. I've been very fortunate to work with people like that and couldn't say anything more about the support that we get from above.
What's the biggest challenge you have right now as the Columbus GM leader? I know you didn't even give yourself the higher title, but running the Jackets, what's your biggest challenge?
Well, the challenge, I think there's a challenge every day in this job. That's the biggest challenge. There's never a dull day. There's always going to be a surprise. And then at the same time, you're going to have to keep the long-term plan in your mind. But having said that, then you have to react to these things that happen every day in hockey world. And balancing those two, I think, probably is the biggest challenge, because everybody's got that urgency that you got to win now. But at the same time, you can't lose sight of what the future for the team looks like. So, yeah, I guess the balance in those two is probably the biggest challenge.
So you brought up balance. Let's go there next. Now, you have to help me with this Finnish word. Sisu. How do you say that?
Sisu.
Sisu, which you've been described as, that's your approach to life. That's a very Finnish thing. Tell us about that and how it impacts you on a daily basis, trying to live that way.
Yeah, it's a great word. I mean, it's used a lot in Finland, so it has had a little bit of an inflation, but the values behind it never will have any inflation on them. You know, it's the grit, the determination, the perseverance, all those words that I think in sports and in life in general will keep you on the right track if you can have work ethic and determination and perseverance and all those qualities, and you've given your best, then you've given yourself the best chance to succeed. And I think that's the recipe that we will try to follow as a team, try to follow it as an individual and the general manager of the Blue Jackets. I think that gives us the best chance to have a winning team.
Well, you were an agent when you started, so I hope you don't mind if I quote an agent. But an agent recently said about you that you're not easy to read, and he said, I can never figure out what's going on with them, that you're an enigma. Is that a fair way to describe you?
I don't know. I think I'd probably be more worried if the agent says that I'm really easy to deal with and they always get what they want. That would probably be more concerning to me, But as a matter of fact, I don't do a lot of negotiations for player contracts. It's Bill Zito, our associate GM, that does most of them. So I'm not so sure that that's very accurate about me. But I am probably a little bit of an enigma to people that I don't know very well or trust 100%. But those around me that I do trust and know very well know that I can be completely different from that description.
Does it take a long time for someone to earn your trust?
Yeah, I don't know long, but I mean, I think it's something that you build every day and something that you expect every day too. So you can, it might take a while to build it up, but also you can lose it in an instant if something happens that you don't earn it every day. But I'm not probably the easiest guy to warm up to. Warm and fuzzy, cozy type of guy. No, I'm not that. But once I get over the hump, then I'm different.
So you were discovered as a player. I don't know if a lot of, maybe even your players don't know that you were a player at first. You know, sometimes when these younger guys come in, they see you only as an executive. They don't even realize you played. What were you like as a player?
It certainly wasn't a glorious career, so I don't blame any player not remembering my career, that's for sure. But I was a hard-working player. I tried to give it everything that I got as far as the approach to training and whatever it was to prepare to get the best out of you. I got to, I think, 55 NHL games. That was always my dream, to play in the NHL. And I remember, like yesterday, the opening night in Boston Garden when I got to play my first NHL game. It's a memory that I'll never, ever forget. And I'm grateful for every game that I got to play in the best league in the world. But I also got to see a lot of other different places in the world. Played in Sweden and Switzerland and Finland, and obviously in So hockey's been part of my life since I started skating at the age of three, and my dad was a hockey player. Both of my brothers were hockey players, and it's always been a huge part of my life and our family life, and it always will be because of the continuation of the career in hockey. And I still love playing it. That's probably the best way to describe the passion for hockey, is that it's just a great game, and I still love playing it whenever I can.
You were discovered playing in the World Juniors for Finland after not making a prior national team. Is that right?
Yeah, I was kind of Kuopio, my hometown, which is now known for a lot of NHL players, have come from there, like Sami Kapanen and Kimmo Timonen, Olli Jokinen, and all those guys. But it was not really on the hockey map when I grew up playing there. And we had some decent success on the junior level there. And we had a pretty good age group. I'm born 66, since the 65s were a pretty good age group there as well. So it was kind of up and coming town in hockey, but wasn't established like it has been now for the past little while. So I played on the second level for men as a 17 and 18-year-old, and then I got accepted to University of Tampere, which is the hockey mecca in Finland, and went on to play for a team there, Ilves, for 2 years, and then went to Clarkson from there. So I was kind of a late bloomer. For my first dream in hockey was always to play on the national team in Finland. I never accomplished that. I remember going to watch the under-18s and near my hometown and thinking, well, I could be on that team, because I already played on the men's second level, which was a lot higher level than some of the guys that got selected to that team. And it was a good source of motivation for me. And then my first national team game was in the under 20, the year that I was playing in the Finnish Elite League for the first time in 85, 86. And then ended up playing in the World Juniors in Hamilton, Canada, and that was a great experience as well, playing in front of 18,000 people in front of the crazy Canadian fans.
Who approached you about coming to university in the States? Had you been to the States much?
I had not been to States much at all before that. I don't know, maybe I traveled through the States to go to Canada, but that was about it. And so I'd been to Canada a couple times before. There was a player by the name of Rob Barnes that played in my hometown, and he knew the coach Cap Rader, Clarkson at the time, and I'd always talked about being interested in going over and playing college. Actually wanted to go over as an exchange student in like high school years, but they could never guarantee you which hockey program you'd end up with, and it wasn't, the information wasn't kind of flowing the way it is now. You get on the internet and you get a virtual tour of school and their hockey facilities and everything. Now, in those days, it was basically paper clippings and yearbooks that you got your information out of. One thing led to another, and they recruited me, and I ended up at Clarkson in 1987, and probably one of the best decisions of my life.
Why was it such a good decision?
Well, I got a little bit of a different education. I was getting my degree from Finland, so I got to transfer 2 years of studies from the university there to Clarkson. I ended up graduating in 2 years to bachelor's degree, obviously very different, the university in U.S. than it is in Finland, but also the college hockey and the relationships that I built in those 2 years, not just on the ice but off the ice as well. To give you one example, Ray Shiro ended up being my agent and hired me for my first job as a scout with the Ottawa Senators. So, you know, I probably have Ray to thank for a lot of the things that have happened ever since and that I'm sitting here right now.
Well, I think Ray was similar to you in that he started as an agent.
Yes.
Tell us about your days as an agent and why didn't you stay in it?
Me and Ray actually kind of worked together a little bit as agents. He was getting guys to Finland and Europe, and I was helping him out and trying to put them on teams in Finland, get them in contact with the GMs there or the right people running the organizations. there were parts of the agent job that didn't really appeal to me. The selling part, trying to convince the parents that you'd be the right guy to represent their kid. It was one of them. I'm not really built for that. It's not one of my strongest qualities in selling. The players that have a tough time getting contracts, the line that I used on a couple of them is that the reason for you not getting the job is not because of me. It's a bad agent is actually looking at you in the mirror. But that's not a really popular statement when you're trying to represent somebody. But a lot of the times it's the truth, and try to be bluntly honest sometimes if needed.
So being bluntly honest has worked for you in your role as an executive, so you're working your way up the ranks. And one of the most interesting things about you, and I think your story is pretty well known, in that you were an assistant GM, and when you know someone else got the GM job, you a couple times walked away from an NHL front office without plan B, without another job at the ready. Does that qualify you as a risk taker, I guess?
Yeah, it does. But it was also a little bit different time in my life. I didn't have kids or a big mortgage or any of that stuff. So the times can change a little bit on that. But I'm a big believer in certain principles. And so if I feel that strongly about one of those principles, then I can be a risk taker, yeah.
Does that go back in terms of principles to your Finnish upbringing and the character?
Yeah, I got to probably give credit to my parents and the way they've always had the principles in our household and the way they've gone about raising me up with certain values. And so, yeah.
So after it didn't work out for you with the Blues, John Davidson ends up getting the Columbus job. And I don't know if I want to say it's just because hockey's a small world, but you know, the moves that you made and the things that you did to get yourself more experience, and then John Davidson did hire you. So take us through how that played out.
Yeah, we had a really good relationship with JD in St. Louis, and obviously they made a decision, and a good decision, by going with Doug Armstrong there, and Doug Armstrong had obviously a lot more experience at the time than I did, I realize in the position that I am now, I sometimes have to make hard decisions, and they don't need to be anything personal. They're just decisions that you have to make with the job that you have, and that's the decision they made. I never burn any bridges. I remain in contact with JD and Doug, and I've had good relationship with both of them ever since, and continue to do so. So then JD gets a job in Columbus, and I'm working as a GM in Helsinki. And one of the reasons why I went back was I just missed being around the team and the competitive atmosphere, and you know that burning in your belly before a game, and when you're on the road scouting for the most of the year, you don't get that, and that's what I missed the most. I actually got a little bit of a little taste of it, and being with the Finnish national team in World Cups of 2004, and then in 2016 when I was already doing this job, but that kind of reminded me how much I missed that, because I started as a GM in the Finnish league in 1995, and did that for 4 years, I love doing it. It's really something that I love doing, and being around the team, building the team, and doing everything in my role that I can to win hockey games, or help win hockey games, I should say. So, then the opportunity presented itself, and JD offered me the job, and it was probably one of the biggest thrills of my life.
When you took the job, became the first European-born general manager in the National Hockey League. Did it take too long for that to happen, in your opinion?
I'm a big believer that shouldn't really have anything. The nationality shouldn't have anything to do with it. It should be just about ability, not nationality. And I try to follow that with anybody on our staff, anybody, whether it's a player or a staff member. So I'm not so sure that the the only reason why we haven't had another European GM is because of the nationality. It could just as well be, or probably is, that there just hasn't been a person that people felt were qualified or was qualified for that job. And if it gives encouragement for the other guys, that I'm sure there are a lot of qualified people, but you have to go through a certain process to get to the NHL. It's not going to happen very often where somebody gets hired from the European leagues, haven't done a very good job there for 10 years, but doesn't have any experience in the NHL that you would get hired. So I think that same as with the head coaching job. I think you have to go through the process here, learn to know the league, the culture here, and everything about it, and then you'll have just as good of a chance to be a general manager, European general manager, or European head coach as anybody else.
So let's talk about your head coach, since you brought it up. What's it like? And I got a big smile there for anyone who's listening. What's it like to work with John Tortorella?
I actually like working with him a lot because I don't know if it's his Italian temper or what, but we kind of have a very straightforward conversation about everything and anything, and we don't waste any time or for a small talk, and we get right to the point, and I appreciate that. And his is probably a lot more colorful than mine, but I have a lot of respect for that, the way he handles his business. And sometimes we have a little bit of disagreement on whether that comment needed the color that he adds to it. But when we do argue, it doesn't ever get personal. It's always about matters that argue. It's not the people. And you know, I respect him as a person, and does a lot of good things, not only on the ice and off the ice with the team, but in the community, and he has a big heart, and I've enjoyed working with him a lot. But I don't always agree with him or how he handles his business. We don't always have to agree, and I'm sure he doesn't like some of the ways I go about my business, but it's always about the matter, it doesn't get personal.
Do you sometimes have the final say? He sometimes has the final say. Does it depend on the situation, if you're agreeing to disagree?
Yeah, I use the term. I let him coach and make the coaching decisions. He says that I try to nudge him, and but that's part of my job, is to ask questions and give him my opinion. And if it affects his decision, so be it. If it doesn't, so be it. And then there are certain decisions that I have to make that I listen to his opinion, but then I'll make my decision, gathering all the information from different people that we work with, and obviously listen to the head coach. But sometimes I'll have to make a decision that disagrees with him, and if that's the best thing for the organization, that's what I'll do.
I can see him right now, Yarmo. I mean, I can hear him, right? What does he call you?
Probably. No, he's got the little Boston accent there, Yarmo, probably, but that's otherwise pretty close.
I do think over the years, more and more people have seen that he does have a big heart. Is he still as intense as when you first started working with him? Has he changed over the last couple of years?
I think he has, and I've said this often, that one thing I appreciate about him is that he's been in the league for so long, and he's such an experienced coach. He's won the Jack Adams twice and won the Stanley Cup, but I think he still approaches every day as he wants to learn and be a better coach. And I think he's changed a lot, and we talk about it a lot, how today's athlete is so different and how you have to change your ways and think about it differently. And Rick Nash puts it in a good way when I talk to him about Torts, and they were together in New York, and Rick Nash said that you always know where you're at with John Tortorella. There's no gray area. There's no wondering, what does he think of me? He'll let you know what you do right, what you do wrong. And I think that's a real good quality with the he's not political. He's going to let you know where you stand, and I think that players, at the end of the day, they appreciate it. And I've heard a lot of guys talk about Torts a lot more fondly in the past tense. They learn to appreciate how he was like after the fact, after he had coached him, because then they get into other situations and they realize that the coach is telling one thing in front and the other thing behind. you're back, and that's something that I know that the players do not appreciate. But with Torts, it's always going to be pretty bluntly honest in what he thinks of you, and he let you know.
What is your daily relationship like with John? Do you talk in the morning? Do you text? Do you meet? What's it like, the dynamic between you two?
A little bit of everything. We text, we talk, we call each other. I go to his office. The one thing I try to avoid is talking to him after the game. So that's never been a good time usually, especially if we lose the game. I just kind of listen and let everybody have their thoughts and let everybody vent if needed. But I don't do a lot of talking after the games, especially if we lose, and try to leave the coaches alone because you know they're in the middle of it and they're in the heart of it. So you know they probably take the losses the hardest, and that's when the tempers can flow over a little bit. And so nothing good comes out of that conversation.
Let's talk about your team now. And again, pretty well-known story about how everything developed, where you took a risk. Well, I shouldn't say. I'll ask you, was it a risk to keep some of the players you had that were unrestricted, play it out, you know, have a great run in the playoffs, and then have them not re-sign? How do you see it all now that it's sort of in the rearview mirror?
Yeah, there's a risk at everything, and I think the biggest risk is not doing anything. But we felt that we had a good team. We were in the playoff race all year. We knew big pieces were going to leave. And I've said this a few times this year that I truly think that Artemi Panarin is one of the best players in the league. And having that kind of a player in your lineup, maybe for the last time, was a unique opportunity for us. And then with the support of everybody in the organization, we said, okay, well, let's do everything we can this year to try to strengthen our team. And we added a few guys, and we gave up some of the future pieces and draft picks. But, it was a risk we all agreed on. We all accepted. And you can debate whether the price for it was enough by winning one round of playoffs. Most people would probably say no. But I think for our city, and our franchise and our fans, it was a big thrill that meant a lot to our organization and our players. Got some valuable lessons through it, and it was something we wished that would have lasted longer. But while it lasted, it was a blast and a lot of fun for a lot of the different people. We evaluate our decision making and the process and how we go about it and how we end up in different decisions. But I don't think there are any regrets. We'd do it over again in a second if we could. There's a price to pay for that with some of the futures that we gave up, but we accepted that and we'll move on.
So the song goes, Elvis has left the building, but instead Sergei left the building and you have Elvis in. Did you know the young goaltending you had, was that part of the evaluation of taking that risk and how he's played?
Absolutely. Korpisalo was selected into the All-Star game just before he got hurt in New Year's Eve. Both of those goalies have had excellent seasons for us, we didn't go out and try to sign a free agent when Bobrovsky left. I think that's a proof that we believed in these two young goalies, that their talent. They just hadn't gotten the opportunity to play regularly. Obviously, Elvis came from Europe, but he's not a kid that came from Europe. He's a 25-year-old goalie who was really good in the Swiss League and in the international level in the World Championships for Latvia. Jonas Korpisalo had waited patiently for his opportunity behind Bobrovsky, and there were a few stints here and there where Bobrovsky was hurt and Jonas got to play more, and he played very well in those stints when he had to play 20 games in a row because of the injury of Bobrovsky. And so he'd proved to us on a small sample size maybe, but he had proved to us that he can play and play well given the opportunity in the NHL, and they both have done that this year and been a big part of our success.
Okay, a couple more things. Who's the most talented player you have right now?
I try not to publicly put our players into order like that. I think we have a lot of lot of talented players in our club. You know, Zach Werenski just scored his 20th goal last night, and at least the defenseman in the NHL. But you know, I think everybody in our team misses his partner, number three, Seth Jones, who I think is one of the best all-around defensemen in the league. And you know, he may not get as many points as some of the Norris Trophy winners get, but he should, in my opinion, be in that conversation every year because of what he does everywhere on the ice by defending, covering so much ice with 6'4" body and great mobility, but then also gets 40-50 points every year as a defenseman. I think he's definitely one of the best defensemen in the league. And you know, you mentioned the goaltenders. We have some very talented forwards as well. But like I said, I don't really want to get into the into ranking our players in order publicly. But yeah, we believed in our team from the beginning of the season, and we had a lot of doubters. But I think that we've shown everybody this year that we're a team that can battle for playoff spot. That was our goal, to make the playoffs. It still is, and we're right there.
We call it the executive summary. Quick hits. Beer or wine?
That's a tough one.
Is that the hardest question you've had today?
I'd say if I'd have to choose, it'd be red wine, yeah. But cold beer after a tennis match is also pretty good.
What do you like to do if you're not working? If you're not in the office, if you're not at a game, what would we find you doing?
Physical activity. That's my favorite. It's my release for sure, where I can go play tennis today and sweat it out, or play pickleball, which I'm very passionate about nowadays. We have a great group of guys in Columbus that play pickleball every morning, basically, and it's a great challenge. It's a great game. I never would have thought that I like pickleball as much as I do, but it's a great game.
Do they treat you like one of the guys, or do they want to know what happened in last night's game, if you won or lost, or?
Yeah, every now and then there's a few comments about hockey here and there. It doesn't bother me. I mean, those are great. Great guys, and they're all supportive, and they're all my friends now.
What's the one thing you've never done that you want to do?
Ooh, I don't really have a single thing that I haven't done that I would be always thinking that's something that I got to do. I enjoy traveling. There are a lot of parts in the world that I haven't traveled to that I'd like to. I enjoy music, so there are certain artists that I haven't seen yet live.
Who do you like?
I'd love to. Well, I like Elton John. I have seen him live a few times. And a lot of different good groups that I like. Billy Joel and Elton John in concert was a great one. Yeah, so I don't know if there's one thing that I got to think about that one.
How about lift the Stanley Cup?
Oh, yeah. Well, that would be... That I was thinking more outside of hockey than in hockey.
So was I, but
for the question. But yeah, that's definitely the one that would be the dream.
Who is the next you? I know you talked about it doesn't necessarily need to, you know, be because someone is European or, you know, to be qualified for the job. Is there a next you that you see on the horizon, or that you've mentored, or that you see that's out there that could be the next you?
Yeah, I don't know if I know I could probably mention a few that I think that are very qualified as far as how good hockey people they are, how passionate they are about the game, how hard they work. It also depends on what they want for their career path and how much they want to get to a certain point or what their goal is. But I'm 100% certain that if some of these very qualified hockey people from Europe want to put their mine into it and get through the process of learning the North American and the NHL business, there'll be another European GM soon.
Thank you so much for doing this. It was great.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The Finnish native, a man of conviction. He has no regrets. He is not afraid to do what he thinks is right. I guess as long as he can take out his frustrations on a tennis ball from time to time. But it was great chatting with him. Thank you for listening to the NHL Executive Suite. We love the feedback. It does go a long way. Do not hesitate to rate and review, and you can always subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. So until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.